Okay, friends, this is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 150B. We've been talking about the various mystery planets. We're in the appendix of the book, and we're dealing with secret doctrine references to the planets and cosmic fire references as well. Here we are at paragraph 35. The solar system is, from the higher cosmic planes, seen as a vast blue lotus, and so on down the scale. Now, this is something that Master DK must have found in a book somewhere. We don't know. Even the Christ himself has only beginning connection with the cosmic astral planes. So we're talking about the higher cosmic planes. And what are they? And let us say, minimally, I would say, they are the cosmic mental plane and from above. So this is indeed a perspective that great seers must have incorporated in their books, from which those who communicate to us are drawing the information. The system is, from the higher cosmic plane, seen as a vast blue lotus. This is the, we have the blue logos, as it is called. Okay, our solar logos is the blue logos. Our solar logos is the blue logos. And so on down the scale. Even the tiny atom of substance can be so considered, and all appear as lotuses regardless of their scale. The solar system is a 12-petal lotus, each petal being formed of 49 lesser petals. So let's see, how many would there be altogether? We can use this. 49 times 12 equals 588. 588 petals in a solar system. And I suppose when we're dealing with the solar system, we have to think, I'll put that in here, 588 petals, 12 times 49. Each petal being formed of 49 lesser petals, and in a way, each petal is a planetary scheme. Now, we have to ask, what about the other planetary schemes? Obviously, seven is not enough, and so in some way they must be incorporated within the 12. Eventually, there will be 12 sacred planets, each ruling one of the signs of the zodiac. The planetary lotuses differ in each scheme, and one of the secrets of initiation is revealed when the number of petals of, and we'll go on, the planetary lotuses apparently have a different number of petals. But since our, why 12 for our solar logos? Well, since our solar logos is a heart center, all heart centers are controlled by the number 12. But just as in the chakra system of man, the heart center has 12 petals, so the other chakras have more or less. So we would have to look within a cosmic logos, where our solar logos is a heart center, in order to get the assignment of the other major stars to the seven chakras of the cosmic logos. And then when you think about it, the power of Sirius is going to suggest far more than 12 petals. So the number of petals will give a great revelation concerning the quantity and quality of any entity. And see, the petals, just as in the human chakra system, the number of petals is determined by the function. The base of the spine currently has 4, maybe one day it will have 5, we're told, but the sacral 6, the spleen 6, the solar plexus 10, heart 12, throat 16, ajna 96 and plus 2, maybe 98, either 2 or 96, and the head center 960 with the 12 major petals of the major heart in the head center. The major center, which is the heart in the head center. So, similarly, in any system, solar system, or system of stars, constellations, there will be different chakras with different functions, and presumably different parts to those chakras, which have something to do with their, are directly related to their functions. And so a different number of petals. So one of the secrets of initiation is revealed when the number of petals of, say, our Earth planet is revealed. Now, we are to be a base of the spine center. If the analogy, excuse me, if the analogy holds good, the human being has only 4 petals in the base of the spine center. Okay, is this also so for our planet with its base of the spine function? Its base of spine function. Our planetary polar opposite, well, this is Venus. And Venus represents a solar plexus center in the solar logos. One day it will be a heart center, but as I said, there's a graduation of entities through various functions of increasing scope. So the functions remain similar, but the entities occupying them may change, just like the office of president remains, but the entity occupying that, the being, the man, occupying that position changes. So Venus is our polar opposite, and our solar plexus center has 10 petals. The number 10 is closely connected with Venus, since 5 is so important. Its fifth ray, the fact that it's in its that it has 5 scheme rounds in which it has completed the entire work. So maybe there is a tenfoldness. Of course, all of this is based upon whether or not we can analogize from the human being. Is the human system like the solar system? In one sense, it probably is. Our complementary equilibrizing planet, and while Mars is closely related, the function of Mercury would seem far more equilibrizing, because Mars always disrupts equilibrium as it functions in Aries, for instance, to disrupt the equilibrium achieved and venture forth into a new enterprise. So it disrupts the present relationship, the present harmony, and ventures into a new enterprise. So Mercury, I think, would be the equilibrizing planet. But Mercury could be considered an Ajna center in our solar logos. It is advanced. It's also related to the base of the spine, but then from the Ajna center, the base of the spine is evoked. The Ajna is actually fourfold, just like the base of spine center. For major petals, well, actually two major petals of four parts. Well, let's put it like this, of two parts each. So 48 and 48 tells us that each of the four parts of the each of the two parts, or this means that there will be four of these parts. We're told there's a petal in humanity. All we can do is analogize, of course. There's a petal in humanity which involves a blue and a violet. Another petal on the right, probably, which involves a yellow and rose. Each one of those, four of these parts, and each of these will have what? Will have 24 lesser petals. Now, can we say this of Mercury? It has a strong Ray 4 connection, and but does it have so many petals of a lesser kind, namely 96? It would seem a big graduation, but from another perspective, Mercury is one of the most occult planets. I think it featured strongly in the previous solar system. I believe its monadic ray, the ultimate monadic ray, major monadic ray, is the third. And in a way, it did not evolve as rapidly as Venus, just as the Buddha, who is Mercury, took so long in a way to evolve, even from the first solar system, that is hinted. And he's certainly been at it much longer than the Buddha, I mean than the Christ, even if his evolution only involved work on the moon chain. So Mercury could be considered the Ajna center, and it would have either two petals or four parts, or really 96 petals. So the secret of the number of petals is revealed when the number of petals of blah blah blah, our Earth planet, maybe four, our polar opposite Venus, maybe 10, a complementary equilibrizing planet, can it be as many as 96, is committed to the initiate. I can see that this last part of cosmic fire, it's very important to have some discussion about that together. These great vistas that open up before us seem remote from our daily necessities, but there are methods of translating what is learned about the patterns in heaven straight to the patterns on earth, and analogies will connect them. Gradually, the interconnection between all the factors in our content of consciousness coalesces, and we have a much more closely related field of consciousness. Okay. Then, point 36, within the Hall of Wisdom there exists a department of which the modern astrological organizations are dim and uncertain reflections. Well, you know, not simply the Hall of Wisdom that we enter when we begin to unfold the seventh, eighth, and ninth petal of the egoic lotus, but really, this is like saying within the spiritual hierarchy itself. The entire hierarchy is, in a way, a hall of wisdom, whereas Shambhala is a kind of hall of life. And relatively speaking, all of humanity is a kind of hall of ignorance. The hall of ignorance is conditioned particularly by the ray of matter, the third ray at first, the hall of wisdom by the second ray, the hall of life by the first ray. These correspondences are important. So the modern astrological organizations are the dim and uncertain reflections. The adepts connected with it work not with humanity, but concern themselves specifically with casting the horoscopes of various great lives, who inform, and there's dot, 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 so what is left out, who inform the kingdoms of nature with ascertaining the nature of the karmic influences working out in the manifestation of the three planetary logoi mentioned under point 35. So they are working with kingdoms, and this is another reason to say that this Hall of Wisdom is much greater than the, well, we have the petals of love, and we have the hall of ignorance, hall of learning, and the hall of love, but hall of wisdom, but then the hall of wisdom for a human being. Either that, or there begins at the point of the first initiation that which which widens out into the great hall of wisdom, which the hierarchy is. So the kingdoms of nature are informed by great lives, which are systemic lives, and they have their planetary correspondences. These are really systemic lives with planetary correspondences. So the human kingdom is existing in all the planets, some analog to the animal kingdom, plant and so forth, on all the planets. Certainly the human kingdom does, and the kingdom of souls on all the planets. This we would expect, at least analogically, and DK actually does mention, looking at this and see humanity, other planets. We seem to have some references, but okay, I'm not sure whether these words are close enough together. The many hidden planets. Okay. Well, I think that at least we have a humanity, certainly of Vulcan, we have a humanity of, well, I guess we can look at it this way. We can say, see if there's anything here, humanity on Venus, nothing like that. Or humanity of Venus. nothing there. But maybe humanity and Venus, well, there will be many. And we did look at Vulcan and Venus. We did look at Vulcan and Venus in terms of their accomplishment. Certainly Vulcan had two-fifths of its humanity, which had managed to transmute, complete the stage of transmutation, which we assume will mean readiness to destroy the causal body. Okay. Three main lines. Its humanity, right. All right, here we go. Its humanity is consequently further advanced than ours. That ought to be enough to show us that at least with respect to humanity, there is going to be on Venus a more advanced type. And we could almost look up different, let's see, let's try this. Vulcan, its humanity. Anything there? Well, we see the one reference anyway. And we see at least lotuses coming in from Jupiter and Venus, and presumably also from Vulcan. So lotuses, egoic lotuses, are always connected with the human kingdom. So indeed, there will be, at least as far as humanity is concerned, the human kingdom will extend to other planets. And maybe other kingdoms of nature too. Certainly the mineral kingdom does. And why not expect some form at some time of the vegetable kingdom and the animal kingdom? So these adepts, and they are adepts, which means they are masters in this department. Okay, masters. Are concerned with casting the horoscopes of the great lives that inform the kingdom of nature while ascertaining the nature of the karmic influences working out in the manifestation of the three planetary logoi. So this would have much to do with scheduling hierarchical activities on these three planets, closely interrelated. They progress these various horoscopes for the next started cycle or stated cycle, and their records are of profound interest. You can sense here that Master DK is closely related to them, maybe one of them. I would conjure students to refrain from attempting to form cyclic computations of any kind, for as yet the many constellations which exist only in physical matter of an etheric nature are unknown and unseen. So he's really, in a sense, begging us, you know, not to take our love of cyclic computation too far, because not enough is known. Yet they are potent in influence, and until etheric vision is developed, all calculations will not only be erroneous, but I guess full of error. And in this sense, a certain humility is required, patience and a sense of timing, all are required. Humility, patience, sense of timing, sense of the possible. All are required. So not only are there many planets which have their influential attractions and repulsions which affect life on our planet, but there are many constellations as well. So we are not playing with a full deck, my friends. We are playing with maybe very few of the playing cards, and it's hard to play the great game without a full deck. So we can think, we can speculate, but to suggest calculations concerning cycles, and he says, you know, this is really a statement of any kind. I would conjure students to refrain from attempting to form cyclic computations of any kind. He gives us certain cycles, you know, 500 years, 900 years, 100 years, 700 years. Those are the ones he specifically gives. 25,000 years, 250,000 years, dealing with precessional cycles for the 25,000 and a very full monadic cycle for 250,000. But when it comes to these ray cycles and other types of astronomical cycles dealing with greater beings, we have to refrain if we do not want to fall into error. A planetary, this is such an important reference, I remember this one very well. A planetary logos is the meeting place for two types of force, spiritual or logoic, which reaches him from the seven rishis of the Great Bear, and I'm just going to absolutely, on their own plane, and secondly, a Buddhic force which is transmitted via the seven sisters or the Pleiades from a constellation called the Dragon, from which has come the appellation Dragon of Wisdom. So basically what we have here is a cosmic Buddhic force from the cosmic Buddhic plane from Draco to the Pleiades. And the question is, to the entirety of the Pleiades, or simply to some? Because the Pleiades, as we know, more and more stars are being discovered all the time, and it is a great cluster, so there must be a lord of a cluster. And could that lord of the cluster be, in a sense, the same or a very high part of the one about whom naught may be said? Now, I think I ought to go here to a treatise on cosmic fire, page 1162. And this is the one, of course. This is the statement. But if it is cosmic Buddhic force, it would be cosmic Buddhic force coming from the Pleiades. A lower type of Buddhic force would not be possible because the scale is too small. This it is that makes me think that considering the above and the meaning of on their own plane, I assume that their own plane is different from the plane of the Pleiades. So I think of cosmic Atma for the Great Bear and cosmic, let me put this a little different. I think of the cosmic atmic plane for the Great Bear and the cosmic Buddhic plane for the Pleiades. And also for this originating constellation of the Dragon, which represents the kundalinic force of the base of the spine center and the one about whom not may be said, but as I said before, more than one ray is possible. for these great entities, just as it is possible, and in fact found in the lesser entities, such as planetary logoi, the human being, the solar logos, and so forth. So, now, this, of course, this seems to contradict chart 5 on page 344 of TCF, where the seven rishis are associated with the cosmic Buddhic plane, as you see. But if there is a vortex on a higher plane, somehow that vortex must be transmitted to lower planes. The cosmic atmic plane is not discussed, and yet the centers in the head and the head center in general are connected with the atmic plane in the human being. So there is such a head center connection for the seven rishis and their function as distributors of the will aspect of the rays that Atma seems correct. So that's why I think there's a blind here, or at least something requiring some really alert attention. This phrase, on their own plane, seems to be discriminated from the origin of cosmic Buddhi. And what they're doing on the cosmic atmic plane, who can tell, but there is the will aspect of the rays which comes through. And a kind of love aspect, interestingly enough, which will come through, not necessarily to the heavenly men, because the Pleiades, or the major ones, distribute manas to the heavenly men. But the Buddhic force of the Pleiades is related to the solar angels, definitely, in a much attenuated form, of course. And I think our solar, our planetary logos is receiving Buddhic force from these Pleiades. The mother aspect is a combination of both the third and the second. And, of course, the cosmic Manu, Stephen Pugh's term, is the source of the will aspect, the rays. Now, usually we consider that the Pleiades will be the source of the intelligence aspect of the rays, and some constellation, be it Sirius, or sometimes I propose the Little Bear, will be the source of the love aspect of the rays. All in the region of the head, really. One could choose Orion, but then it would be more in the torso, symbolically, of the one about whom naught may be said. So we find that the dragon constellation is of huge importance, stimulating the love-wisdom nature of the lesser dragons of wisdom. So Draco, dragon, is of great importance, stimulating the love-wisdom aspect of the lesser dragons of wisdom, which we call planetary logoi, lesser dragons of wisdom. And that is the love aspect. See, it's very interesting that when DK lists the three great constellations, he sometimes lists them as Great Bear Pleiades Sirius, and sometimes Great Bear Sirius Pleiades. There's an interchange there concerning Manus with respect to our solar system and its planets. Buddhic force is definitely reaching a planetary locus, which means more than one. And that Buddhic force is connected with the seven mothers, connected with Virgo and its second ray. But monastic force comes to our solar logos via Sirius. and monastic forest to our heavenly men via the Pleiades. Well, you know, any great constellational lord, CNL, constellational logos, okay. And let's see if I have one for this. Constellational, okay. CNLD, CNL, constellation logos. So let's do it this way. CNLD, we'll call this a constellational lord. So any great constellational lord has more than one ray, has more than one major ray, and more than one major function. We see that the logos of the constellation of the Pleiades works monastically and also works buddhically. And the planetary logoi are receiving cosmic manas, but see, you have to ask, what else are the planetary logoi receiving from the Pleiades and Draco? And when you're dealing with such a large structure as the Pleiades, you have to maybe look at that structure and say, from what part of this great aggregation are different functions emanating? Because we certainly have the major seven, which seem to be important in their own right. And then we have added to them two more, so we have a major nine, Atlas and Pleione, father and mother. Excuse me. And then we have, as well, the additional hundreds and hundreds, probably all of them arranged somehow in tiers, at least subjectively. Because in the human being, there are 960 petals arranged, I suppose, in nine, let's see, well, in 10 tiers, that's a possibility. When you multiply 108 by 9, you get 1072. Or is it 9? What is he? Let's look at that a little more closely. 108 times 9 equals 972. That's it. Not 1072. Whoa. You get 972, which is the total number of petals, including 12 major. And then you'd have to add, perhaps, some seven-faceted jewel at the heart of it all, which I have sometimes wondered, could it be the seven major Pleiades? A seven within the 12, making a 19. And those seven, in a way, being a source of the seven rays. Well, we'd have to also look at the structure within the human head and say, well, there are 12 zodiacal constellations reflected in the petals. And what about the sevenfold jewel? Would that be an important dispenser of the seven rays within the heart and the head center, connected then to the jewel and the lotus, connected then to the monad? With the revelation of esoteric numerology, so much will be learned. But you just begin to see that one has to be very patient in this learning, because it is so vast, and haste makes waste, and rushing creates confusion and error. You can imagine that the Master DK long ago began his accumulation of knowledge. Certainly he was active at the time of Pythagoras, and when he was Arya Sangha, an early Buddhist scholar, and probably continued in that tradition for some time. Maybe he was Plotinus, maybe. Some suggest that he was, who was a great scholar and theorist, a Neoplatonist, which would be fitting, wouldn't it, if you think about the Pythagorean Platonic tradition and their academies. Yes, he said he had two European incarnations. Well, anything occurring in the realm of Greece, that area, Italy, Greece, Asia Minor, as it's called, would be European in that sense. Well, anyway, this is a very important little section, 1162, and I oftentimes refer to it. Just to show that the chart on page 344 may not show everything. And maybe there are atmic vortices that work out more demonstrably on the Buddhic plane. But I do want to connect the seven rishis with Atma, just as we've been told that the head center is connected with Atma. I want to do that. And, of course, the connection of the Pleiades with the 12 is very fitting, because Buddhi is the great second ray, which is connected with all heart centers, and hence with the number 12. Maybe Atma is more connected with the 10, which is a 1, and the 7 being a reflection of that 1. When we put 7 and 12 together, we get 19, and then with 3 super centers, which do show up in our maps, we have the magical number 22. Here are how super centers seem to show up. But then again, as I related, the 14 may be implicit in this kind of setup. A very occult number in Egyptian occultism. How many assessors are there? Are there 42? Who judge you after death, the 14 times 3. Everything is controlled by number and the ordering of numbers. And so there is certainly a mathematical key to the secret doctrine. All right, so I have expanded on this point quite a bit. And now we get into tabulations, and we have taken these references from the secret doctrine and from cosmic fire, and they are very expansive, deep, and blinded references, and we've tried to hint at the cosmic structure that they suggest. There are still many, many pieces missing, but at least we have them in our consciousness. We have these possible structures and their relationships in our consciousness. And with some placement of the factors, the possibility of the gelling activity can occur and other necessary pieces of information can fall into place. With regard to the tabulations related to astrology, these are the rays and planets according to Annie Besant, and I think DK said that they have a previous solar system meaning. And the colors too, but maybe some application here as well. The ray, the method, and you kind of wonder with ray one whether we shouldn't have Agni Yoga here. Is it possible? And I'll just, you know, ask that as kind of a, well, I won't do that there. Could Agni Yoga be involved? As the method involving the first ray. We know Agni Yoga is a first ray method. We know that Uranus is the highest ruler of Aries, which is the sign of Master Maurya, at least one of his powerful signs. And it's a fire sign, and he's given the yoga of fire. Maybe from the will aspect, angle, as DK says. So the color is flame, and it suggests, flame suggests red and orange, both first ray, first round, colors. So the planet here, Uranus, is in its monadic ray. The method says Raja Yoga, but the Agni Yoga emerged publicly after Besant had done her work, Annie Besant. So maybe Agni Yoga, the yoga of fire, and the color flame, interesting color because it seems to be a blend of red and orange, and in that way I think sometimes Vulcan is a blend of red and orange. So we have some very high indications here. Can Uranus represent the sun? It can. It's often veiled by the sun, especially in relation to Leo. When it comes to Raja Yoga, we have the kingly science of the soul, and with Agni, it's very Leonian in a way. And with Agni Yoga, we have the yoga of fire, very Arishan in a way. When it comes to the love wisdom ray, it's the ray of love wisdom, and the method is Raja Yoga. Can Mercury be associated with that approach? Yellow and rose are interesting because they represent the two sides, maybe I think it's the right-hand side of the Ajna center, and then are connected with the astral and Buddhic plane. Let's just see what page this is actually on. Page 648. So we can go there, just make sure that we're getting everything into it. Tabulation. Yeah. Mercury is an unusual planet here, but it does connect with the Ajna center, and the two colors given are, one of them is the color of Mercury, and the other, the color of the color used in relation to the astral plane. Raja Yoga certainly can benefit from the detached observational Mercurian attitude, but is Mercury, well, in a sense, Mercury can be considered a distributor of the second ray. How? Mercury as distributor of second ray. Because it rules Gemini and Virgo, two powerful second ray constellations. So again, Raja Yoga. I feel quite sure that this will and power should, that we should be substituting Agni Yoga for that. Mercury is also a star of intuition. Mercury connected with yellow, a color of Bodhi, and with the Buddhic plane and the plane of intuition, Mercury having particularly an intuitive function. Once the mind is stilled in Raja Yoga, the intuition can reflect. The next is the ray of higher mind, and peculiarly Venus. Well, Venus does connect with the higher mental plane, perhaps not so much with the spiritual triad, but in a way, if you look at the third and lowest point of the triad, the monastic permanent atom, Venus can represent that, especially now when the super principles are Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus. So higher mathematics is here listed along with philosophy. And the esoteric color of the fifth ray, which is, it's indigo, is listed. Am I correct in, let's just see how this works out. The color bronze still seems to be associated. So maybe the color bronze can be arrived at when we blend the yellow and the orange with an admixture of brown. Because yellow and orange would give us yellow-orange, and we need something to deepen. Maybe some red can be found in here as well. More a copper tone, but a little bit, I think, lighter. The higher mathematics and philosophy, of course, makes sense. Venus can be considered the monastic permanent atom at this time. Venus is sometimes simply called the intellect, which makes this fit. And the color of the higher mental plane is considered either blue or indigo. Bronze will have some orange, some yellow, and maybe some red in it. And it looks like it will be a lower color in relation to the third ray. We have to study the origin of this particular metal. I guess we can ask that, you know. Whoop, upload error. Not happy about that. Okay. We could say, how is bronze made? And brown, okay, that's bronze. Brown sugar made, no. How is bronze made? Bronze, made out of copper and arsenic to form arsenic bronze. Copper is involved in the forming of bronze, and copper is the metal of Venus. Let's take a look here. Bronze is an alloy of copper with zinc. Modern usage has blurred the lines between brass and bronze. Now copper alloys generally are called brass, with bronze considered a type of brass. So a blend of copper and zinc. I'm not sure of the planetary meaning of zinc, but we say that here we have the esoteric. Well, we have copper and zinc, with copper being the metal of Venus. To what metal is zinc related? This would be a question. All right. Now, the next ray is called the ray of conflict, but he doesn't mention harmony, and tension between opposites is the method. The color green can be used only because green is central to the spectrum, so related to the fourth ray, first ray, which is central to the spectrum. Why should Saturn be there? Well, only why Saturn? We say only because green is the color of Saturn. It's related here to the birth of man, which is the fourth kingdom. And there's probably a tension in this way between the animal kingdom and the higher animal kingdom and the angelic kingdom. Tension between the higher animal group and the solar angelic group. A kind of bridge is built between them. It could be, you know, Saturn does do some bridge building. But generally, one is surprised to see the color green here associated with conflict, though it has been suggested that green in the previous solar system could have turned to yellow at the decline of that system. Now yellow. So now, yellow represents the fourth ray, and not. Green. Okay. First solar systemic colors and processes. When it comes to the lower mind, okay, practical science, fair enough, the moon. The moon represents that which the senses reveal. Why the color violet? Well, it's considered the color of the seventh ray relating to the seventh plane over which the moon presides, as we see. And here is the moon presiding over the blinded lives, the elemental lives. So this is a possibility. And let's see what else. This color is violet. I think it's difficult to associate the lower mind with violet. But the etheric body can certainly be related to violet, and the lower mind controls much of the etheric body. But we're dealing in the realm of materiality here, anyway, with the lower mind. The lower mind is often focused concretely. And practical science is considered a type of yoga. When it comes to devotion, Bhakti yoga, naturally enough, and Mars, the flaming Bhakti. And the colors rose and blue, they fit very well and are well related to this type of astral yoga. Now, what's surprising is when we look at magic, it's not surprising to see Jupiter, which is in a way the lord of ceremonial worship. The method is ritual, in which significant actions, well-managed significant actions, are taken with the right attitude and at the right time. But why bright blue? Well, if we take the colors from the planets, we understand their derivation. So Jupiter has a lot to do with the bright blue, but really magic has to do with the seventh ray, and its color is more violet than bright blue. But as stated by DK, some of these assignments really refer to colors of the previous solar system, or color as it was understood in the previous solar system. So Bassant's assignments are interesting in terms of the way they presently correlate, and there are some present correlations, but also in the way they deviate from the present assignments. Now, we're just learning what the assignments are in our solar system and can have no certainty about them. So when we now compare with what may have been extant in a previous solar system, we have no way to confirm it, but we do look for relations to the present solar system, and sometimes we can find them. So Wheel of Power, conferring the will via Agni Yoga, I would say, love wisdom, conferring intuition via Raja Yoga, with Mercury a planet of intuition and of mentality present and representing the Ajna Center, which is man, and man has to have that second ray soul through which it expresses before long, even now. It's very much related to what man will become. The love, wisdom, energy, and man is Mercury. Then we have the higher mind, and higher mathematics and philosophy are certainly found. Is Venus found there? Which would be a better planet? I mean, maybe Venus rules all three subplanes of the higher mental plane, in a sense, but I don't think really Venus makes its way into the spiritual triad. It's more a role for Saturn or Uranus or Jupiter. Jupiter has to do with higher mind, but also with the intuition. Venus with the light of soul-infused mind. Uranus perhaps more with the intuition, but it's also rooting concrete science. So Venus has a quasi-appropriate place there. We'd have to test statistically the extent to which Venus is involved in the charts of higher mathematicians and philosophers. Conflict, she doesn't say harmony through conflict, and the tension between the opposites, which is reflected in the physical nature through Hatha Yoga, represents the method. Saturn to bring regulation. And the color green is given, and this would have to really be a first solar system color. The only thing that we can understand about the green is that it is midway in the spectrum, just the way the fourth ray is midway in the spread of rays. And sometimes green, I think, because of people's habit of simply going from 1 to 7 in a sequential manner, green is related to the heart center. But I don't see this, actually green is a third aspect color, and the heart center is anything but the representative of the third aspect. Then the sensorium, as it is called, the moon operating in practical science because of its connection to the dense physical level and to the violet devas. Then devotion via Mars. I'd like to see where Neptune is, but maybe we have not had a chance yet. Okay. What can we say here? What is attempting to be said? Mm. the bright blue and violet interchange. Bright blue is connected with Jupiter and the sixth ray. Bright blue is not a seventh ray color, but Jupiter is in part a seventh ray planet. So there's much having to do with the etheric level here when magic is mentioned. Neptune still is, however, missing, but I think we are only mentioning, and she is only mentioning, the orthodoxly considered rulers, the planets that are within the circle of Neptune, of Saturn. All right. Well, we see how the earlier workers and theorists had part of the picture. DK revealed much more. We can only imagine what will be the case at the next revelation. So much that we are searching for now and which seems beyond our grasp will probably be given at that revelation, but the world has to, I would say, settle down a little bit. I hope there's no analog between the First World War in the teens of the last century and the teens of this particular century. Things are building up, and we can only hope that this does not have to precipitate on the physical plane. But the reason I mention it is that following such a precipitation, the Tibetan or members of the hierarchy are likely to emerge and make visible and palpable what could not be given during chaos. All right. Well, I think we are at the point where we have to say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 1. Is it 152B? And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 153A. So, I think we can now take this program off the air and go on. It's very interesting, this section of the book, very interesting, and making us think in very broad terms to fill in spaces which we may not have thought about and which maybe the intuition can help with. Occasionally something drops in, an association drops in, which allows us to connect the unknown larger patterns which are hinted at here. So, okay, that's what we'll do. And we'll continue shortly. And one thing I want to check, however, is whether, yeah, that's correct, we're correct. All right, we will move on now. Talk to you shortly.